and welcome to the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast. I'm Mark Simon. Change of pace today, we're going to talk to Eno Saris of The Athletic about Grayson Rodriguez, Jacob Junis, team pitching philosophies, and the sabermetric stat Stuff Plus. And we'll be joined by Noah Gatzik and Brandon Tu from SIS Scout School. They've got tips and observations for people interested in becoming baseball scouts. Let's get to it. Eno Saris is a senior baseball writer at The Athletic and the chief evangelist for Stuff Plus, a stat that evaluates a pitcher's stuff. We don't talk a lot about pitching on this podcast, but Eno and I were just on the same panel at Sabre Seminar, and I thought it would be good to bring him in. Hey, Eno.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. So let's start just overview here, treetop kind of the kind of conversation we're going to have. Stuff Plus. I think people know they have a general idea of what it is, and maybe they know that they can find it in a place like Fangraphs, but you want to just give us the 30 to 60 second pitch on what it is and what we're going to talk about here?
I mean, the easiest way to think about it is it's just trying to capture the quality of the physical characteristics of the pitch. So we've got, you know, things like spin rate, spin axis, velocity, release point, movement. It's all defined off of the primary fastball. So the secondaries, there is a sort of thinking about how arsenals fit together that's involved in it. But it's supposed to be what the name implies. It's supposed to be a metric that captures how good their stuff is.
And it's essentially more of a process thing than a results thing.
Yeah, we don't tie it directly to any of their own results. If you want to think of it another way, it's kind of a pitch comping machine. We kind of take... you know, this release point, this velocity, this movement, and kind of just spider through the universe and see how pitches like that have done in the past. So, yes, it's tied to results writ large, but not those specific results of the pitcher.
So those that are unfamiliar, if you go to Fangraphs, they actually just redesigned their leaderboards, and you can find it under pitch modeling. I'll have a link in the show notes to that. And I want to start, I figured the way we would do this is I'd pick four or five teams, and we would just go through and maybe pick a pitcher or two, and you could talk about them in relation to a combination of just stuff plus the results and maybe looking ahead for the rest of the season. First team I wanted to do that for, San Francisco Giants, who have a number of intriguing pitchers, and then they have a number of intriguing bullpen usage trends as well. What do you got for us there?
I've got someone who's right in the middle of both of those things. So if you look at the San Francisco Giants starter, they are starters. They are not standout by Stuff Plus. They, in fact, are more standout by Location Plus, which is just looks at how good they are at throwing it to good locations. So, you know, that's kind of a bet I think that the Giants have made in general is they like command. But if you look at the best Stuff Plus of any of their starters, it belongs to a guy named Jacob Junis. And that might be surprising, but it's not because of his fastballs. It's not because of his changeup. It's because he has the best slider on that staff. And that's something that I think is pretty obvious when you watch him pitch. He's thrown that usage up to 40-45%. He throws that slider a ton. And so he's kind of interesting because he's at the nexus of a couple things. One is, can you succeed by just throwing your best pitches more often? You know, there's a discussion about how often you need to throw a suboptimal pitch in order to set up your optimal pitch. You know what I mean? So, you know, he's kind of been like, no, man, I could just keep throwing the slider and nobody can hit it. It's also right there in what I think is the most interesting thing about the Giants is that they have taken a somewhat Rayzian model of, you know, pitcher usage. And I think they've pushed it to another level. They are using openers or bullpen games or piggybacks in three out of their five slots in the starting rotation.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. Their only real, like, normal starters are Alex Cobb and Logan Webb. And in every other spot, they've got Jacob Junis, Ross Stripling, Alex Wood, Sean Manaea, Ryan Walker, even a guy named John Brebbia. Like, they've got all these guys. They've basically said, you guys aren't five inning guys. You're 2 and 3 inning guys. Maybe we'll stretch you to 4 if you're being really efficient one day. And it's really working, but I have to tell you, fans hate it. And it's been something that has become a topic of discussion on local radio, sitting in the fans when I've, you know, sat with friends watching Giants games. It is a real topic of conversation about what the role is of a baseball team. Is it to win games, which seems obvious, but also to entertain, because it's a sport and also an entertainment business. So, and Jacob Junis sits right in the middle of that, and none of it's his fault. He's just a really nice guy trying to throw a ton of sliders.
Now, what's fascinating about this, and he'll be an important guy for them down the stretch, he started off the year pretty shaky. He had a 5 ERA on July 18th, as a matter of fact. In his last 8 games, 22 strikeouts, 2 walks, FIP of 108, ERA of 156, 4 scoreless against the Rays with 7 strikeouts. You get the feeling that if he wasn't a Giant, he would probably be a Ray because he fits the profile of the arm angles and all the stuff there. Yes, interesting about the way that the Giants have gone about things this year, but I think in the end that, at least for this year, it's essentially fitted to the personnel that they've got. This year it works. Maybe in a future year, maybe when they've actually got starters who are healthy, they don't have to necessarily do it. Let me shift to the American League and let's talk about the Houston Astros, the defending world champs.
Yeah, they're super interesting because they, you know, for one, Max Bay worked with me on Stuff Plus and is now with the Astros. And if you do something like sort team leaderboards for the best Stuff Plus in baseball, it's no surprise. Number one in Stuff Plus is Houston. Number two, Tampa. Number three, Yankees. 4, Dodgers. 5, Baltimore. Baltimore is led by a former Houston employee. And generally, the Dodgers, Rays, Astros are thought of as the 3 best player development factories in baseball. And Seattle is 6th on this list, and they also have an internal Stuff Plus that I know about, and they have had a lot of success developing starters. So that's a little feather in his cap, but also a duh moment because, you know, we know who works there. The greatest thing about them is they've taken players that did not cost a lot on the international market. Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy were all considered too old in the international market. They were just a frail old 19 when they were signed, and they cost them a collective, I forget, something like $60,000 in signing bonuses. And through the use of Stuff Plus and the basic characteristics of what makes a good pitch, they've been able to coach them up. And a lot of them say, you know, like Luis Garcia, who's not even on my list because he's hurt right now, but, you know, Luis Garcia tells me, I had a fastball and a changeup when they signed me. They taught me the slider. They taught me the cutter. Hunter Brown said the same thing. I was a fastball curveball guy, and they taught me that crazy 92-mile-an-hour slider, and I've been coaching up my other pitches as well. So, you know, the best thing about Stuff Plus, and, you know, it is very strong in terms of appraisal of pitchers. That it gets a little bit weaker when you're talking about starters because there's a whole interaction of all your different pitches. But the strongest place for Stuff Plus is actually in coaching, because how do you tell someone what to do with their curveball or what to do with their slider if you don't know what a good slider or what a good curveball is? So in a lot of times, what you do is you create these contour maps and you say, Christian Javier, you know, if you could get an inch more ride on your fastball, it would jump from here to here on the map. And that's what we're going to work on. So that's been a big part of what they've done. To me, the big story this year is Framber Valdez's cutter. It's taken him to another level, added strikeouts to what used to be a full ground ball game. And as exciting as he has been, Christian Javier's loss of fastball stuff has been as devastating. But Framber is the good story, and Javier needs to find something movement-wise on that fastball.
I want to go back to Framber Valdez for a second, because if you, like, at least to me, I think that, especially now that he strikes guys out, or that the strikeout can be there for him with the cutter. No hitter is like, it's the fact that he got one is not surprising to me. If he's, you know, all you need is, he needs a good ground ball defense behind him. He needs balls hitting the right spots, and he needs to be able to strike guys out. And on that night against Houston, against Cleveland, he was able to get it. Hasn't been as good since, but I just thought he's a favorite to watch pitch for sure. The other thing I noticed in looking at the Stuff Plus leaderboards, if I lowered the minimums to 40 innings, was that there are a lot of Astro relievers at the top. Presley, Abreu, and Ryan Stanek are all at the top.
There's a fascinating Stuff Plus primer in the glossary that has a validation and explanation, a larger explanation of how this works. And what you'll find is that it's super, super powerful for relievers. And the reason is that the place where Stuff Plus is most powerful is under 200 pitches. And so, you know, for a reliever, that could be multiple appearances. You might be looking at a reliever that last year only threw 200 pitches and thinking in the major leagues and thinking, should we acquire this player? Whereas a starting pitcher, 200 pitches, you know, by their third start, they should be past that. And so, you know, relievers are small sample, and Stuff Plus is amazing in small samples. So there are absolutely teams making decisions on acquiring relievers based on Stuff Plus. And there are now pitchers that are aware of that. You know, I was talking to Trevor May. He's like, you know, I know my next contract doesn't come from this or that or the other thing. It comes from my Stuff Plus. And I know, for example, that Evan Phillips, when he was acquired on waivers by the Dodgers, he's now their closer. They acquired him on waivers. Why did they do that? His Stuff Plus was really good. So, yeah, you know, when it comes to relievers, it does a better job. And also, if you think about relievers, their arsenals are less complicated and they have fewer pitches and they don't have to turn the lineup over, you know, multiple times. And so it is the turning lineup over multiple times where you have to start thinking, should I throw this sort of crappy sinker a couple of times so that they don't just keyhole all my other pitches?
All right. So for the third one, you pick. You got someone, you got some team, you got something interesting that you want to share with regards to Stuff Plus?
I wonder, you know, I think Baltimore is interesting. And one thing that I said that they were kind of led by, you know, a former Astros employee. And, you know, I think that there are little things here and there where you can see that in terms of, you know, Kyle Bradish is a guy that, you know, he struggled a little bit at first. He does not have the greatest fastball, but he has a top 10 slider among starters in baseball. And he's found a way to kind of organize his arsenal around it. And he's breaking out. He's a great story for us. And another one that I thought was interesting was that Grayson Rodriguez came out. And, you know, we do have some Stuff Plus numbers for our AAA that I have for Athletics subscribers. And his numbers were off the chart, like leading AAA. And, you know, he had a great fastball, great slider, great curveball, great changeup. It's like, what? He's not missing anything. He's got four pitches. They're all like through the roof Stuff Plus. He's throw hard, all this stuff. He comes to the big leagues. And I don't know if he just, you know, had a bad start or something, but all of a sudden he's throwing this cutter. And he's throwing this cutter over and over again. And I'm looking at my sheet being like, man, he's got 110, 120, 130 Stuff Plus on all his pitches, and he's got 77 Stuff Plus on this cutter. Why is he throwing this cutter? I couldn't understand it. It was getting beat up in terms of results on the field. And I think it was just because he was worried about what his approach would be against left-handers. He goes to the minor leagues, he scraps the cutter completely, and he finds a way to get lefties out, and he comes back up and he's shoving now. And I think that's another way that coaches can use Stuff Plus. There's got to be some sort of threshold where it's like, okay, this pitch is a round league average. It's not your best pitch, but it's a round league average, and we can use it to keep people from, you know, thinking too hard about your other pitches. If it's down at 77, 60, maybe that's just too bad to use in this way.
One of the things that I did, this was yesterday or 2 days ago, I was looking at the Orioles and I said, when this team makes the postseason, they're going to need one pitcher to be really, really good. And I saw Rodriguez's 5.44 season ERA, and then I zoomed in on it and I looked at his game by game, and I noticed essentially what you said, that maybe that if they win the World Series, is it possible that we're talking about him being like Urias and being great in a fairly sizable quantity of games in order to push them all the way through when their other starters are going to be averaging 4.5 ERAs along the way?
Yes, I believe in his stuff that much. And I believe that in the quality of his, as a pitcher, he's had a 3 ERA since he's come up. Peripherals are pretty good. He's totally turfed all the home runs he was giving up earlier. The only caveat that you hear in my voice
innings.
Is yes. Yes. Last year he had 73 innings. This year he already has 123 innings. And, you know, I think it was funny a while back when Alex Anthopoulos was with the Blue Jays, someone asked him, you know, what do you guys do with innings limits? Like, how do you guys manage that? And Alex Anthopoulos said, well, we just kind of do what the league does, is we kind of look at what they did last year and add 20 innings. And then somebody said, why? And he said, I don't know. It's just what people do. And that was a while back, and maybe yep. They've advanced. I know that, you know, if you ask a team now, they'd be like, oh, we're monitoring their release point of their stuff, and we're trying to look for signs of fatigue and, you know, this and that and the other thing. You still see people get cut off innings-wise once they kind of reach, I would say, maybe 25% more than the year before, something like
that. Yeah, and he's there and beyond. And yeah. But if he's already 50 over, you know, why not keep going, I guess. But I guess my point there could be like, all right, he could pitch in a scenario where he's pitching the 4-3-6th, and then they bring in their crazy good guys at the end of the game to you know, to finish it with Bautista Cano and Kolam, and that's how they win.
That is, yeah, I don't have the number in front of me, but you know how crucial the sixth inning is. You know, it's just that soft point where your starter has shown the other team all their pitches. And so they've been trained to hit that starter. No matter what you think of the third time through the order, you know that in the sixth inning, pitchers start to wane. And then if you think about how bullpens are constructed, they are constructed for the eighth and the ninth. And if you're lucky, you've got a seventh inning guy that's good. So the sixth inning is where you use your worst reliever and your starter's at his worst. So the battle for the sixth inning, I think of this also with Taj Bradley in Tampa. Even if you just go into the postseason and you say, okay, we're going Bradish, Flaherty, Gibson, and you know, I know it's not necessarily by true talent, maybe our best three, but if they can give us three or four innings, we do have Grayson for two. And we do have Taj Bradley for two. And I kind of think that's how their teams are going to work around this innings thing.
The good curiosity is still abound as we head towards October. Eno Saris, senior writer for The Athletic, thank you for joining us. We'll be following your work closely.
Thanks for having me.
So instead of talking to our VP of baseball, Bobby Scales, today, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to bring in two of the folks who run the SIS Scout School that Bobby Scales oversees. Scout School is our way of training our seasonal employees in the art and science of baseball player scouting at both the amateur and the pro levels. It's a cool employment perk for the folks that work here, and a lot of successful graduates of Scout School now work for MLB teams. So let's say hey first to Noah Gatzik. Hey, Noah.
Hey, Mark. How's it going?
Good. Just a brief summary of who you are and what you do here.
Yeah, okay. So I've been with SIS. I started in 2016 as an intern. Actually, I left. I took a job with the Reds in their baseball operations department. Ended up coming back here. You know, I've had a bunch of roles here. I've worked my way up, and now I'm a product manager here. Where it's really relevant in this conversation is I used to do a lot in our baseball operations department. Me and Josh Hofer really were the ones that kind of got the scout school going back in the day. And even though I'm no longer in our operations department, I still love being a part of it. And I'm Mark. We have conversations very frequently. And every time I have a conversation with you, I feel like I learned something new. So I'm excited. Hopefully I can turn the tables at least one time.
And second, we've got Brandon too. He's been on with us in the past. Hey, Brandon, just give us a little about yourself.
Like Noah, I started in operations. I've been in operations since I started with SIS. That was 2019. Now I'm an operations associate with I just like talking about prospecting, scouting, baseball in general. I think I really have a passion for it, talking about scouting and prospecting. And while I've never done it for a team or anything like that, I think just having an eye on, you know, writing stuff, writing scouting reports, and kind of getting stuff out there in the public is what's really pushed me to like be involved in scout school and help and give back. Because I remember my first scout school and learning a lot from it. And then just kind of wanting to give it back and how much I've learned in the time I've been at SIS looking at all this stuff.
Awesome. And Brandon is kind of the model, I think, for people that are somewhat self-taught. All right. First question for both of you. And I guess, Noah, we'll start with you. Is scouting hard?
No, it's the easiest thing ever. anyone can do it. No, yeah, it's super difficult. I'd be lying to you if I said anything else. It's the hardest thing to get consistently right. There's so many unknowns that go into it, but you try to learn. And, you know, I was, when I first started, I was very wrong. You know, that's probably the biggest thing I've learned is I got humbled really quick, thought I knew what I was talking about. I used to play baseball. I was like, oh yeah, I know everything. And then it's like, no, you really don't. But there's a lot that goes into it besides just the skill sets. There's a lot of travel that people don't tell you about, or it's not as glamorous as it might seem to be. So it is a grind, but ultimately, if you love the sport and you love, I love understanding the why are players good? How are they good? And yes, there's others that go into it, but scouting is a big part of that. And that's why I was always drawn to it.
Brandon, is scouting hard?
Extremely hard. It's probably the most difficult thing to do in sports. I don't think scouts get enough credit sometimes at how wrong you will be most of the time, but when you do hit on something, when you do find that player, it's probably one of the most rewarding things. And I've never experienced it, but I would almost imagine it's like playing blackjack sometimes. Like, you're just going to miss a lot of the times, but when you do hit, those are the guys who get stuff done. It's just very challenging to go through and to think about all the misses you've had. But then, you know, you're right on that one player. You're like, oh, I got this right, like, on him. I thought he was going to add this pitch type, and this is what he did. And it's just, it's rewarding when you look at guys that you've looked at before and look at them in even pro ball and in the majors and see how much success they've had.
Let's go through here just quickly. Pitching, hitting, and defense. We'll go one at a time. Brandon, start with you. I just sat in on your talk yesterday. You had a 2-hour instruction on scouting pitching for, it looked like, about 30 of our crew. What's the single biggest point that you try to get across when scouting pitching?
For me, it's competitiveness. And I know we touched on it at the end of the talk, but for me, if a guy doesn't have the mindset and the confidence to and the conviction to throw what they need to throw in certain situations, they're not going to succeed at the big league level. And I think that's the toughest thing to scout, is scouting conviction, scouting competitiveness. But I think it's the single most factor that separates guys who have really good stuff and just don't succeed in the big leagues, and then guys who have, you know, maybe average stuff but succeed in the big leagues at the same time. Off of that, I would say also, for me, I know velo is a huge factor when it comes to pitching. And I would say, if you don't have velo, then you better have an outlier trait at some other part of your game, whether it's your stuff, whether it's an outlier slider, an outlier fastball, an outlier command. I mean, there's a reason Kyle Hendricks pitches in the big leagues at the velo that he pitches at, because of command and movement. So you got to be an outlier in some factor in order to pitch in the big leagues. And I think that's the biggest thing for me, is having the competitiveness and the conviction to throw what you want, but then having an outlier trait that makes you big league successful.
Curveball or a slider or any number of pitches certainly could qualify there. Noah, what's your take on, like, the biggest thing that you try and get across when you're teaching about evaluating pitching?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Brandon kind of hit most of the main ones, but obviously the obvious answer is velo and just raw stuff without being repetitive. That's kind of the most obvious ones. What I like to kind of make sure everyone gets across is, like, understanding, like, when you're seeing different types of pitches, like, there's multiple different types of breaking balls. There's multiple different types of changeups. There's, like, multiple different types of fastballs, and just getting an understanding of, is this a sweeping curveball or a slider? Or, I know the sweeper is the new thing nowadays. Is it more of a, is it like a tight spin? So being able to not only be able to identify the pitch types, but be able to properly describe, like, the shape of the pitch and, like, what's actually happening is really important for anyone who's trying to be a scout, especially nowadays, out with teams manipulating pitches, wanting, you know, all the player development, all these new pitch types that come out, I feel like, every year now. It's going to be really important to, like, get really understand real trajectory of where the ball's going, why is it doing that, and how is it getting there? And then you can kind of get a sense of the whole pitcher's arsenal like that. So I think that's probably the biggest thing I like to get across, is make sure everyone understands the correct terms when scouting.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of terminology, and there's only more terminology being added on. Talk to Eno Saris talking about stuff plus and the importance of that with regards to evaluating pitching. All right, hitting. Noah, start with you this time. What's the biggest thing you try to get across to people when you're teaching evaluating hitters?
One of my favorite things with hitting is it's bat speed. That's kind of something that you can try and teach it, but some guys, you just really can't. It's just kind of an innate skill. Some guys just have it, some guys don't. And when I say bat speed, I mean, like, noticeable difference in bat speed. There's a reason why some guys can catch up and handle 99 miles per hour, and there's a reason why some guys just don't have a chance. And a lot of it is just being able to, let's call it like it is, velocity is only going to continue to increase until we eventually get to a breaking point. But if you can't hit premium velo, you're not going to make it in the big leagues. So that's kind of something I always like to, for me anyway, that's the first thing I notice, is, like, does this guy have the bat speed to physically be able to even handle the velocity? And if he can't, then it's kind of something that I don't really waste my time with.
Brandon?
Yeah, bat speed's number one, but for me, number two would probably be zone awareness. Once you realize how a guy understands his zone, understands how pitchers are attacking him, where pitches are ending up. Is he chasing a lot outside the zone? Is he swinging and missing in the zone? That's probably a big red flag for a bunch of guys. If you're swinging and missing inside the zone, because that means you're getting pitches to hit, you're just not making contact. So zone awareness and figuring out when to swing and when not to swing, and then being able to make solid contact on pitches in the zone is probably the biggest thing. And understanding the area which you can do the most damage on pitches is probably the last thing that comes for a lot of guys. But if you see it early in a hitter, you can almost project them out to be a very successful hitter at the big league level if they have that understanding of what pitches they do damage on the most.
Next thing about zone awareness is I think that people that are trying to learn how to scout, that seems like one that should be able to be picked up by most people as they're trying to figure it out. You guys talked about the difficulty and how scouting is hard. That one, at least relatively speaking, I think sounds a little easier. What about defense? Brandon, start with you.
Yeah, for me, it's fluidness in the way a guy moves. Like, I think Ha-Seong Kim is a great example. Like, I saw him in KBO, and I thought this guy is a very good defender. I don't know if I've pictured him being an elite defender, a Gold Glover, but he definitely has just a fluidness and emotion about the way he fills the baseball. And it's something that jumps off of a video or even watching him in person. Like, I've seen him in person a couple of times, and just the way he takes ground balls, the rhythm and the timing of which he has. And he's just an athletic mover. When you're a defender, it doesn't matter if you're an infielder or an outfielder. If you move athletically to the baseball, you're going to make a lot of plays that other guys just can't. And that's what's going to separate a lot of guys as defenders. Because there's guys who can also get to the baseball and not have the athletic ability to maybe get around the baseball and field it properly. Or there's a lot of center fielders who have the speed to go get a baseball, but it's not like they're gliding to the baseball, like, say, Michael Harris or Britton Doyle in Colorado, who like kind of glides to the baseball. Like, those are the ones that separate us, like the exceptional defenders. And that's what you're looking for, is the fluidness and the motion and the athleticism of defenders.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. One thing that I was kind of fortunately taught, and I'm gonna name drop one person, I won't do it anymore, but as I said, I worked with the Reds. I was fortunate enough, and I happened to be in the same room as Barry Larkin a decent amount. He was kind enough to answer some of my questions, even though he didn't have to. And one thing he always wanted me to really emphasize when I was evaluating specifically infielders for defense is look at their feet. He told me that I can watch an infielder take 3 to 5 ground balls, and I can tell you immediately if this guy is knows what he's doing, or if we got a lot of work to do, just based on what his feet are doing. Does he have a good base? Is he in good rhythm, like what Brandon was saying? Does he have a game plan? Is he like manipulating his body to get himself in the best position to really succeed, make these awkward arm throws? Maybe, you know, ball takes a bounce. Is he in a good position to make a good reaction and be able to make that play? Or does he not even give himself a chance to do that? So infield defense, that's kind of something that I always look for at first. Look for the feet. The feet should be able to tell you the story. Outfield, it's not as straightforward. Obviously, you would like to see some athleticism. You'd like to see someone with a good arm. Like, these are things that you would like. But the ability to kind of understand how, when they're tracking a fly ball, are they really seeing it well? Are they able to like kind of run directly to the spot? Are they kind of, we call it the drunk running, where it's like, oh, he's going one way, then he's spinning another way. And sometimes, you know, there's sun and there's wind and there's elements there. But like, if you notice a consistent pattern, how are guys, you know, running directly to a spot? Are they willing to dive and make out these plays? Are they being reckless, though? Because there's a difference between being smart about it and being too reckless. So that's kind of the stuff that I look for in outfielders, is the ease in which they're going under. Like, and I'm not talking about the routine fly. I'm talking when they have to like go run a play down. Do they make that transition? Do they make it look smooth? Is it easy for them? Or is it a struggle? Some guys are fast enough to outrun those things, and you can note it's hard, could be hard to notice, but if you watch enough of it, they can tell you the whole story.
Kevin Kiermaier is pretty good at catching up to fly balls. I know that's one that I think is a common bond for both of us, that he looks pretty natural and he's pretty good. Do you have any other examples? You mentioned Ha-Seong Kim, but it doesn't have to be defense, hitting or pitching, to close this out. Is there like one example that you like to cite of a player to make a specific point?
One of my favorite things I like to do is I like to show people what not to do. And when I say that, is Kyle Schwarber catching videos is something that kind of stands out pretty quickly on, like, okay, this guy's great hitter. Not saying anything about that. Let's watch his hitting videos. Defensively, catching wise, it's not going to work. But what I like to do is really take a look at some of these top prospect videos, or it doesn't have to be top prospects, could be college guys. And you can kind of see they're just kind of slow down the swing path, kind of see what they're doing and get an understanding of like, okay, he's having success, but like, why is he having success? Does he have like a short swing? Is he, you know, is he very simplified? Does he have a long swing? You know, what is his load process? Is he going directly back? Is he dropping his hands? Can he handle velo? Why can't he handle velo? Is it the bat speed? I tend to be biased. I always show videos of like Gary Sheffield and guys with like just like the all world bat speed that you just dream upon. Then you kind of have to get a little bit more realistic, knowing those guys don't exist that well. That's the main thing I focus on, especially with hitting.
Yeah, for me, I'll give you an example of two guys that I've seen recently pitch who it stands out that like they're very, very good at commanding multiple pitches inside the zone. And both of these guys, you could consider them front runners for both the AL and the NL Cy Young. Gerrit Cole and his command of multiple different pitches. And I've noticed recently that he started to throw a cutter more, and he's commanding it well, and he's throwing it inside to lefties and you know, busting guys inside, but also backdooring it to lefties as well and throwing it away from righties. And the fact that a guy who has premium pitches like that can just add a cutter, and not in the middle of the season, he's been throwing it for a while, but just have the command and the conviction to throw that type of pitch over and over again. I mean, he hits the glove wherever he wants, and it doesn't matter if it's the fastball, changeup, curveball. Like, that's real command, is having the ability to spot the baseball wherever you want it and putting the baseball in spots where you're not going to get hurt. And Gerrit Cole does a great job of that. And you can tell when he goes home runs sometimes on like changeups or fastballs or whatever, he'll miss his spot and he'll get angry at himself that he missed his spot by 3 or 4 inches. And major league hitters are good enough to hit that over the fence. Another guy I've noticed recently is Zach Gallen. Zach Gallen, he hits the glove wherever he wants, and it's fastball, curveball, cutter, slider. It doesn't matter. He hits the glove. And I that's just something that sticks out. When you see someone have that level of command, then you start going like, okay, that's double plus command. That's 80 grade command. Like, that's what I'm looking for when I'm looking for a guy to spot pitches. And then working back from that and being like, okay, but can a guy be successful by just throwing the ball in the middle of the zone? Like, can a guy get away with throwing the ball in the middle of the zone? Absolutely. But major league hitters will definitely jump on pitches in the middle of the zone if you're not careful. And having the ability to spot the baseball like that is pretty impressive from those two guys.
All right. So if you're looking to apply to work at SIS, check the career section of our website regularly, sportsinfosolutions.com. If you want to connect with Noah or Brandon, find them on LinkedIn. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mark.
Appreciate it.
And this wraps up this week's episode. You can follow us on social media at SIS_baseball and our guest Eno Saris at Enosarris on Twitter. For Eno, Noah Gatzik, Brandon Tu, and our producer Justin Stein, I'm Mark Simon. Thank you for listening to the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to the SIS Baseball Podcast. If you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. If you have any questions, email the show at mark@sportsinfosolutions.com or tweet us at sportsinfo_SIS.